Back in 1998, I was working in a grocery store, and I had a coworker who was always looking for a way to make enough money to stop working at that grocery store. One day he came up to me and said, "Patrick," he called me Pat back then. "Pat," he said, "I have this amazing investment opportunity. There's a company that's recently gone public, and their stock price is on a meteoric rise." He may not have used meteoric, I am. But anyway, it was increasing in value greatly. And he said, it's a company, it's an online bookstore. And he said, I've got an idea. He said, "How about you take your savings, as well as the money you've received for student loans, and invest them in this company? Because I bet you, in the time you graduate from college, you will not only have recouped your savings and the investment, the student loan money, but you also have you've grown your savings, and you don't have to worry about having enough money." Well, needless to say, I didn't think much of my friend's idea. He was very energetic, but I also thought it was probably a borderline illegal to take student loan money and invest it in a stock. As the months went by, though, this company's rise in value, eventually they disclosed that they had not made a profit, and the stock price plummeted, and I sighed a sigh of relief that I had not taken my life savings and student loans money and put them in this company. Well, years later, as it turns out, my coworker was prophetic. In case you haven't guessed, that online bookstore turned out to be Amazon.com. It took only a few years, and ironically, the dot-com bubble burst, and after that, the Amazon took off. As of this year, it has achieved the distinction as the world's largest retailer, surpassing Walmart. I'm not sure if my coworker held on to his shares. He always seemed to be that kind that if it started going down, he was going to bail. But if he had, he would be a multimillionaire. All because he took a risk. All because he was all in for that one thing. Kingdom of Heaven today in the text is described in terms of values, terms of monetary value in these parables. The treasure and the pearl both have exceeding value. Both would be equivalent to that investment back in 1998 in Amazon. Both surpass the expectation of those who find it. Both are instances where the individuals must totally divest of all their assets to acquire them. Both seem to have found what is of ultimate worth to them, and they must have it at any price. When we consider Jesus' parables, though, I think we have to remember that the use of metaphor, or in this case, simile, functions as a literary caution to try not to make one-to-one correlations of parts and people and aspects of the parable with aspects of God and God's kingdom. The kingdom of heaven is not simply the hidden treasure or the pearl. The kingdom of heaven is likened to the entirety of the parables. It is more accurate to say it is the action and the motivation and not an allegorical depiction of Jesus, the church, or Jesus' followers, or us, present-day disciples. Allow me to demonstrate. An allegorical understanding of the hidden treasure would be something like this. The treasure is the gospel. The field is Jesus Christ, in whom the gospel is hidden. The disciples find Jesus and, overwhelmed in joy in the discovery, leave their former life behind all to follow him, all to have Jesus, I think would be more strict to the text. That may sound good, but consider how it does make Jesus into a commodity, hidden for only the most enlightened to find, and then to use their insights and resources to have their own personal Jesus. In the case of the treasure in the field, the person is not looking for a treasure in a field. This person just stumbles upon it. So you see how these allegorical readings of both that and the pearl of great price are problematic. What it does is it commodifies God's kingdom. It turns faith into a treasure hunt for personal enrichment and reduces the kingdom to something we can own and control. To lead us into a perhaps different understanding this morning, I would have us consider the second of those two parables, the pearl of great price. Let's think about the merchant. The merchant is in a constant search. He orients his life around a singular objective, the acquisition of fine pearls. We too, I think, are constantly seeking for our proverbial fine pearls, a new job, another degree, a new relationship. I'll be happy when I find you fill in the blank. When we attain said job or degree or relationship. However, we also know the satisfaction of obtaining that goal is short-lived. And then we are on to the next thing, the next means of satisfying that desire. Unfortunately, this mentality is also part of our Christian faith. We can so easily fall into the trap of seeing ourselves as giving all of our life in sacrificial ways, but in actuality, oftentimes, we do it when it benefits us, when it enriches us. We then relativize its value. How is my faith in God making my life better? You heard allusions this morning to Romans 8, all things work together for good, who love God are called according to his purposes. How many times do we use that, and that good being the good we define? We see it all the time. And if and when this idea of what faith should do for me does not have any value any longer, we move on to something else that we believe will satisfy. All of this leads to a highly individualistic faith that only sees the kingdom's value in what it can do for me. That's perhaps maybe where the merchant was, where he started. But then I think we see in this story his mentality shifts from one of being insatiable to one of being completely satisfied. You note he did not leave his options open for the next thing. He went all in, invested all he had. And in that way, he became owned by the very thing he sought. The pearl had captured him, had captivated him, and now he was that pearl's possession. He no longer was a merchant. He no longer was looking to acquire. But he was all in, not out of a gamble, but rather out of a conviction of what was of ultimate worth. By the conclusion of the parable, he is no longer, as I said, a merchant. And I love how Amy Jo Levine states it. She says, "The merchant has removed himself from the realm of buying and selling, seeking and finding, wanting and wanting more. Not only can the cycle be broken, the merchant demonstrates that one can step out of it entirely." The kingdom of heaven is not a transactional thing. It's not a transactional reality where we can satisfy certain desires, use them for what we want, and then place it alongside other means of being satisfied. That's the way, unfortunately, we treat it. The kingdom of heaven, instead, is a transformational reality. For when we understand ourselves as part of that kingdom, when we live into it with gratitude, then in reality it possesses us. And it satisfies our seemingly insatiable desires to have more and more. And we realize that it has no equal. It has no equal. So today I wonder, can we assess, truly assess, what is of ultimate value in our lives? And not in a way that is relative, but what is of ultimate concern? I've shared with this congregation before a great quote from Frederick Buechner, which I commend to you, and I hope that you will use that space that's in your, announcement portion of your bulletin where it says reflections on today's service, I want you to write this down. I'm going to say it a few times, and I'll say it slowly, I promise. Buechner wrote this. Your vocation in life, your vocation in life is where your greatest joy meets the world's greatest need. Who needs me to repeat that? Be honest. It's okay. I'll read it again. Everybody got that? Your vocation in life is where your greatest joy meets the world's greatest need. Vocation, Buechner said, is derived from the Latin word vocare, which means voice. Vocare, calling. The merchant found his calling. Have you? Are you and I willing to set aside all that we have to obtain what our souls want most? And by that, I do not necessarily mean all our money, but where is our life motivation? Where are we willing to invest our hopes and our dreams, our passions, our talents, everything that we believe we can give to that which we believe meets the world's greatest need? I believe if I had gone all in and invested my life savings in Amazon, I might be filthy rich today. I would be. But I don't think I'd be satisfied in that. When we go all in only for ourselves, for our personal or worldly gain, we are not satisfied. You see this all the time in the news. People who have obtained a status that we sometimes long for, oh, it must be great, it must be comfortable, are not satisfied. But when we commit our full sense of being all in the kingdom, when the concerns of God become our concerns, when the delight God finds in us becomes the delight we find in God and in others, when we believe that within the kingdom are the callings that resonate with what we have been given, that are beyond what we could have imagined, that demand our recognition of their ultimate value, I think it's then that we move away from that transactional faith that wants to get something for me, to a transformational faith that demands that I be part of something bigger and that will fill that space of life that I so wonder how can ever be filled. What do we long to see and experience? Where do we say, I would give anything to see that? Would it be for enemies to become friends? Or for racial divides to fall away? Would it be for violence to cease? Family infighting to find peaceful resolutions and reconciliation? Would it be for children to never to go to bed hungry? Or would it be for humanitarian programs to be fully funded? What is our church's call, our vocare, to which God is saying we must go all in? Where do we believe that our greatest joy will meet the world's greatest need? One of the great ends of the church, and that's Big C Church, that our denomination ascribes to, there are six. The sixth one wasn't added until the 1930s. Before then, they were penned sometime in the late 1800s. This is what it reads. The church is to be the exhibition of the kingdom of heaven to the world. The exhibition of the kingdom of heaven to the world. It's not just to aspire for that. It's not just to hope for that. It's not just to sit quietly by and wait for that. It is to exhibit that reality. The merchant had a great pearl to exhibit. I would imagine that people came around and looked at that pearl and said, wow, that's something else. The man who found the treasure in the field had something to exhibit. What can we exhibit that is part of the kingdom of heaven? How might the community around us be transformed when they see us exhibit the kingdom? When they see a church willing to go all in for the sake of the kingdom. My prayer today is that we have the boldness, truly the boldness, to explore that question. I pray that we have the courage to ask for that Spirit's leading us into a greater understanding of what it means. And I pray we experience together the surpassing joy when we accept the challenge that God brings to us. All praise, honor, and glory be to the one who showed us what the kingdom looks like and calls us to follow him in it. Alleluia. Amen.